Hey everyone, Kevin Rose here. Welcome to Proof, a podcast dedicated to the NFT ecosystem. Here we interview artists and builders shaping the NFT space with a focus on high quality projects. Now, the episode you're listening to now was actually first released on my other podcast, Modern Finance, but as we decided to kick off this show, we wanted to re-release my previous NFT episodes here so that this feed represents all of the NFT content that I've created. Now, going forward, the Modern Finance podcast will have a focus on finance, and this Proof podcast will have all of the NFT content. If you're a fan of all things blockchain, you'll want to subscribe to both shows. So with that, enjoy the show. Wanted to let you know before we get started, I have a brand new newsletter. If you are already a member of the Kevin Rose newsletter, that one I've had around forever, you'll need to sign up for this new newsletter. This is just dedicated to all things Modern Finance. It's going to come out a little more frequently. So with the Kevin Rose newsletter, it's like every couple months. This one, I would say it would be about every other week is what I'm aiming for. And inside of the Modern Finance newsletter, you'll find out about all of the new crypto projects that I'm checking out. If you want to see the projects that I'm into or any other financial articles that I think are worth your time, this will be the newsletter to sign up for. Head on over to modern.finance and you'll find the newsletter form right there. So today I'm speaking with Eric Cauldron, who is the founder of Artblocks. Artblocks, I would definitely say, is one of the coolest NFT projects out there. Normally, when you think about someone that is showcasing NFTs, you think about these showrooms. There's a bunch of them where artists come, they upload their artwork, you go on there, you make bids, you purchase the artwork, and it gets transferred to your wallet. So with Artblocks, it's completely different. This isn't about someone working in Photoshop and generating a piece of art. It's actually coders that are coming in and they're writing these algorithms that generate art on the fly. So basically what it means is, even though they're putting together a framework of what this art might look like, you as the purchaser are the one that is actually generating it. So when you go to check out and buy a new piece of art, you essentially hit play on the algorithm and it mints you that NFT in real time. Meaning you have no idea what the art is going to look like until it actually arrives in your wallet, which is very cool. Some are these beautiful, dynamically created clocks. Others, small little collectible worlds. Other projects have little cute characters to them, but with the same theme. They're generative, meaning that they're not designed in Photoshop. They're actually pieces of math that run. So please follow along in the show notes. You're actually going to want to click on and check out the detailed links because it's not going to do it justice until you actually see them for yourself. Also, it's worth noting that Eric was very early in the CryptoPunk scene as well, so we'll cover his wild ride collecting punks. All right, let's get to it. Enjoy the show.
Kevin Rose and his guests are not registered investment advisors. All opinions are Kevin's and his guests alone. Nothing discussed today should be relied upon for investment decisions, nor is it investment advice. This show is solely for information and entertainment purposes only. Please work directly with an investment professional.
Eric, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
This is going to be a fun journey. I want to hear how you got started because you're working on one of the coolest projects right now. I've been a fan since I first heard about it, but walk me through like your first intro to crypto. When did you get into it? When did you get into NFTs?
Yeah, I started my journey New Year's Eve 2016 with this weird desire that I had to have one Bitcoin before 2017 started. And I was at a party, I was drinking heavily, and I was like, fine. I remember like sometime around 11 o'clock, I was like, screw it. And I bought the rest of a Bitcoin on Coinbase. And that, I don't know why. I just had this like weird, like, how I feel like I'm relatively tech savvy and I've always appreciated tech. And somehow I missed 7 years of this. And I just, when I realized it, it hit me pretty hard. I was like, no, man, I can't believe I missed this much of this like revolution. And I decided to just jump in. So jumped in then, you know, Coinbase had two things to buy, Bitcoin and Ethereum. And I'm curious. So I started looking into Ethereum and I was like, well, that's weird. This one feels like a scam. Like this isn't Bitcoin. So what, why would there be a second one? Started looking into it, very quickly understood what a smart contract was. Literally blew my mind. Like the like Bitcoin blew my mind. Just like revolutionary transparency, economics, great. But it didn't do what Ethereum, like when I understood what a smart contract was and coupled that on top of what Bitcoin does and then therefore what Ethereum does, it blew my mind. And I was like, I want to dive into this. I want to be a part of this. So first thing I did, at this point, I had a 2-month-old baby. And so I was obviously I had to pay attention to the kiddo too, but the kid would go to sleep and I start writing and learning Solidity. And my best friend had a kid right after I had a kid, and I wanted to get them something for like the kid's birthday or for the kid's birth. And I feel like this friend has everything. We didn't really need anything. So what I did is I wrote my first smart contract, and I locked 10 ETH, which at the time was worth $100, into a smart contract for however many million seconds that would unlock on the kid's 18th birthday, like to the second that kid was born.
Wow.
And it's reckless, but like it was $100. And back then, like $100 is still $100. But I could have also gone and bought like $100 worth of diapers or bought $100 Wobanub or whatever the hell these kids are using these days. So I am into tech. I like nerdy things. And so I thought this was perfect. So I wrote the contract. Obviously, like that kid's net worth, I think, was probably pretty high compared to most kids' net worth by the end of 2017. I think ETH at that point hit 1,200. So it felt like a pretty good investment, but also pretty reckless. I told him, I said, this is either going to be worth a stick of gum or it's going to be worth a house. But I don't think it's going to be somewhere in the middle. Like it's either going to be worthless or it's going to be worth a lot. And yeah, so that was my first like real immersion into it. It was a 7-line smart contract that hopefully it's secure. I don't know. I mean, I assume so because it's like just really basic stuff. And that was it. I remember chatting with friends of mine about the concept of non-fungibility right after that. That kind of blew my mind too. And then, you know, but at that point, like I'd be talking to my friends and they all thought I was absolutely batshit crazy, and that's okay. And then when the CryptoPunks launched, you know, I definitely hadn't formulated an idea nearly to the level that they took it, but it validated all the crazy talk that I had with my friends. But they still thought CryptoPunks was absolutely crazy too, right? So like,
yeah,
it validated it in my weird brain. And so then it kind of gave me more inspiration to go from there. I think,
how did you find out about CryptoPunks? Where did you find this? And did you start collecting them then right away? Or
yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Reddit. I heard of CryptoPunks on Reddit. I'm pretty sure I heard of CryptoVoxels on Reddit. I think I bought into CryptoPunks before I got scammed my first time, because I think if you've been around long enough, like you've participated in at least one or two rug pulls.
Oh, 100%.
I think, and then I remember like seeing the CryptoVoxels post on Reddit, and I was like, I'm not getting scammed this time. It's just like a big white room and you can put squares into it, and this dude's charging $100 for like a plot. A week later, I came to my senses and I was like, no, this is awesome. So then I aped into CryptoVoxels a week after it launched. But yeah, like I think most of what I was exploring back then was on Reddit. I wasn't on Discord yet. I was on Slack, but that was literally all just like the random shitcoins that we're so deep into in 2017. Yeah. And there was no conversations about smart contracts. I still have pretty big bags of stuff, so I check it every now and then on those other Discords, and it's still amazing how spiteful and resentful everybody can still be about Ethereum and smart contracts. I literally think they just never understood them, and they've never given them the time of day. Otherwise, it's really hard to not be excited. If you're excited about the future of money, of Bitcoin, I just don't understand or process how you wouldn't be excited about smart contracts.
Like, so do you think that's still the case today?
To a degree, yeah. Like there's been a couple smart contract platforms or crypto platforms that adopted smart contracts. And it's just like half of the community is okay, what now? And it's like, build, do something. Like it's not just going to happen, you know, but there was a blockchain that I participated in. I was brought in as like a smart contract consultant or advisor. And I try to help them, this is in 2018, try to develop their smart contract program. And, you know, there's like these private channels where we're talking about smart contracts. Then there's the public channels where every now and then we'd mention smart contracts and we'd make an announcement and people would be like, okay, but it just never really soaked in or absorbed. And it wasn't until NFTs, honestly, that I think most people, or DeFi also, it's like we have these two camps. I think those two things have really clarified and opened people's eyes to what a smart contract is, but they no longer look at it as a smart contract. They just look at it as an NFT.
Right.
And when we talk about the success of a technology, we have different stages. And I tell people a lot that like NFTs won't actually be like proliferated into our society until we're just trading in digital goods. And the question is, oh my gosh, this isn't an NFT. Like that, everything is just going to be one automatically on some kind of blockchain, because otherwise it would feel weird that it wasn't. But no one's going to care about whether it's an NFT or not when they're buying it. They're just going to assume that it is. And then in this case too, it's like nobody really cared about smart contracts. Now people are using NFTs, and as people are using NFTs, we no longer have to talk about smart contracts. A lot of people that are trading an NFT don't understand that they're using a smart contract. So it's that example of like mass adoption can actually just absorb the use case of it without having to know how it works. They don't have to understand this is an ERC-721 compliant smart contract hosted on the Ethereum blockchain. This is just an NFT that someone tells me is what it is and proves to me that it is, and I'm cool with that. And I think that's why we're seeing a bigger adoption now. It's just one less layer of understanding that you have to be able to participate in the network.
Right. That makes sense. I can't let you slip on the CryptoPunks thing, though. We got to talk about that because you collected some epic stuff. Tell me about what you got in the early days. You got to share a little bit about how crazy.
So the day of the claiming, the day I saw it on Reddit, I swear it was a weekday. I mean, I was at home and at my office, but like I didn't feel like I had job responsibilities that day. And if I did, I totally ignored them. So I read it and I hadn't synced my Ethereum wallet in a few weeks or a month. And so I was, I think, 600,000 blocks behind. I can't remember.
Used to be the case. I remember those days. You had to wait for it now.
Yeah, there was like that social media platform that had launched, and like every time you wanted to post, you had to sync the rest of the Ethereum blockchain. I forget what it was called. I don't know what it was called. But so I had this like panic to sync, and I didn't feel comfortable with like my crypto, or what was it called back then? My Ethereum wallet. Like there was a website where you could put in your private key and transact.
Yeah, Mew,
like,
right?
Yeah, my Ether wallet. Yeah. And yeah. I never really felt comfortable with that.
I didn't either. I was like, what is this? It's hosted on the web. It's saying it's not in this local. It's running in my browser. It always freaked me out.
It's don't give us your private key, but here's the little box to put it in when you do want to. I felt like I had to download the entire blockchain, and it took me forever. And I literally watched. So when I started syncing it, there was one ape left, and I watched the ape get picked off. And I'm like sitting there panicking, thinking, man, I really wanted that ape, but okay, there's a bunch of zombies left. So by the time that it synced and I was ready to go, I was able to claim 34 zombies. So I guess I was pretty early in that process.
To give people a sense that are just now listening that aren't in this world, zombies today are going for what, a little over $1 million, basically. And your gas and claim prices would have been what, like about $5 a zombie back then?
I want to say it was like 35 cents.
35 cents, okay.
Yeah, and I still felt... Part of me felt stupid too. Obviously, I was excited about it. And I do get to tell people this. I actually was really drawn to the art, to the actual, because I like generative art. I've been a generative art person for a while. So to me, regardless of the blockchain, whatever, I mean, if this would have been, I don't know, maybe if this would have been CryptoKitties, oh, I like CryptoKitties. I think they're pretty cute too. But like if this would have just been like something ugly or pre-made, I may not have jumped into it. Like I wouldn't have been maybe intrigued by it. But the fact that these dudes created an algorithm that created 10,000 unique things inside of a 24 by 24 pixel box from a, forget blockchain, like from just a total technical perspective, I got really excited about that.
Oh yeah, me too. I only had 12 of them when they first launched. And I remember being like, oh, I want one with a little pipe in it because that looks awesome. And my dad used to smoke a pipe when he was still alive. And I just thought those like little things were so cool. And so I collected a bunch of little Piper guys. And it was just fun, but nobody had any clue they were going to be worth anything.
No.
It was just like, let's just do it because it's a fun little experiment and we can play on the blockchain. Yeah.
There was no idea behind expected value at all, but there was a huge value for me in terms of validation, right? Like I could then tinker with this. Mm-hmm. And my thought was like, okay, if I still have proof of owning this in 3 months, in 6 months, that is the killer app for me. In the art world and in the collectible world, to me, that is the killer app for blockchain technology. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any reason to believe I wasn't going to have ownership of that CryptoPunk in 3 months, but it was like, okay, let's see how things go. And so the more time went by, the more the community grew, the more that, like, I remember the first time someone offered me, I think it was like one ETH for a zombie.
What was the ETH trading app then?
Oh, I think my first zombie I sold for $400, maybe $500. So like, it wasn't, and I was like, what? Like, somebody, because CryptoPunks were trading for like $10 or $15. So
right.
Like, I was like, wait a minute. And I know that mine are more rare. I'm not ignorant to the fact that mine are more rare, but I was like, wait a minute. Like, we just went to 500. And at that moment, it clicked again. And I was like, man, this is what I thought it was going to be. But I still never thought I'd sell a zombie for $1 million. Like, never. In fact, last year, my wife and I wanted to build a little container house in Marfa. And so after not selling, so I did sell 15 zombies over the course of the first couple of years to fund the development of Art Blocks. So the market crashed. So I didn't have literally any personal money to put into development. and B, because it felt right. Like ArtBlocks was inspired during the moment that I was claiming my CryptoPunks and people were offering money for these green cartoon characters. Like it just felt right. It was like perfect.
Yeah.
But last year, my wife and I were like, okay, punks are starting to get valuable. They were, I think when I started thinking about this, like a zombie I could have sold for $5,000 or $6,000. I said, I'm going to wait till I can sell a zombie for $15,000. We're going to sell 5 zombies and build a little container home out in West Texas in Marfa, right? Like just three miles east of town. And it just felt like such a crazy thing. And I tell my friends, I'm like, I'm waiting for them to hit 15,000. And they'd be like, good luck with that. And then they did hit 15,000. And then I sold 5 of them for between 15 and 25,000. And I felt like I was killing it. Like I felt like right. I had just like won all of the games of the world. And it was cool. I literally built a house using 5 CryptoPunk zombies, including the foundation, the well that had to be dug, the septic system. It was cool being in the community and kind of sharing that. Every time that we made progress on the well or the septic, like they all knew what I was doing. At this point, I've been in the same Discord chat with the same 50 people plus people that come and go for 3 years. So it, mm-hmm. like these are, and it was COVID. So these were people that was interacting with even more than my normal friends outside of crypto. So It was a pretty cool thing. And then once you break the seal, it's weird. It's okay. Now all of a sudden the zombie is worth 80,000. It's like, well, why would I pass up this opportunity? So then, you know, I sold another zombie for 80 and
so how did you get an ape?
Yeah. So when that validation started happening, like maybe 2 or 3 months after CryptoPunks launched, I can't remember exactly when it was, but like some dude dumped their aliens and some dude snatched them up like instantly. And to me, they were like, I think it was 10 ETH, which maybe right around that time, it was like about $10,000 each. And I was doing pretty well in crypto in general, but it was all in PIVX and Mu and all these other like coins. So like I was at that point, those coins were going crazy. And I was stuck in the masternodes where I couldn't really sell my tokens without, and there was like this pride of owning like a masternode. It was,
oh, I remember that. Yeah, it was like trying to get enough coins to get a masternode.
Yeah, and it's like the equivalent of a zombie back then, right? It's, oh man, I've got 2, you know, PIVX masternodes. I don't know, whatever. So yeah. Like it literally kept you from selling. So I remember seeing those aliens sell and being like, damn, like someone's onto something here. This is pretty massive. So I saw a 8 list for 5 ETH, and I think at that point ETH was up to about $1,000, and I made some moves and I bought it. I literally like just blew 5,000. The only thing I think in my life I had ever bought that was other than a car that was more than like $1,000. It felt completely crazy, but it felt right. And then once you get the taste in your mouth, like I saw another ape listed for $800, and I just like immediately, because at this point now I've got money, and I mean I had the zombies, but like I claimed them, but now I had put some real, to me at least, like massive amount of money. And so I was watching the channel every single, I was always around, but like then I started getting real active. So the moment that other ape hit, I was like, hell yeah. And I bought it instantly. And then I actually didn't buy any punks for almost 2 years after that. I just hung out and talked to people and got to know people. It was actually not until I went to NFT.NYC in 2019 and I met Matt and John. And I was walking around the streets in New York after meeting them. And obviously you're at this conference with all these other people that kind of show that you're not the only crazy person in the world. There was more than 10 people at this crypto conference. There's more than 10 people that are into this. And I was walking around the streets in New York and I was like, man, I feel like I want a whole set of CryptoPunks. Like I want at least one of every attribute. And I started doing the math and I was like, okay, that's ridiculous. It's like $15,000-$20,000. Over time, I just talked myself into it. I came home. I spent, I think it was 3 months secretly like opening other accounts to buy them so that I wasn't maybe alerting other people to the fact that like I had this like crazy obsession now with collecting. Because the thing is, it's like when, if you've been around the CryptoPunks long enough, it's like when hoodies became a big deal, all of a sudden like hoodies tripled in price. Yeah. So I would have screwed myself. And so I had to like, and this was a lot of fun too. Like I had to meticulously massage the market, placing bids with other accounts so that it wasn't like, oh, look at this dude. He's trying to collect one of every... And it took about 3 months, but I did it. Like I ended up...
Except for the alien though, right?
You did except for the alien, yeah. So when I say... I guess I call them attributes. I'm gonna excuse myself from the alien. Although I do own 10% of an alien, so I feel value-driven there. Whatever. It was another very reckless decision that I made in my life, but I thought it was a pretty good one. Yeah, I decided to collect them. And I think the last one I got was the orange side that I placed, I think it was either the orange side or the pigtails there was one that just wasn't on the market. And that was the biggest fear. It's like, are they just never going to be available? And I placed a bid on one of the dev punks, which historically they were very not, they wouldn't let go of their punks very often. And I thought I placed a decent enough bid. And then one morning I woke up and I had it, it was either the orange side or the pigtails or the choker, but I had it in my account and I was like, all right, sweet. I've got my collection.
What do you, so since you're so deep into this space and you've been around it for so long, what do you think? Is it just when I look at attributes, I think, okay, obviously there's different levels of scarcity because like the beanie is the number one non, I guess it's the lowest single attribute that is not related to like type. Race or type. Yeah. Yeah. Are there ones that you look at and you just think like these are probably undervalued right now? Or are there ones that you think, because the hoodies is a great example of it just became cool instantly. It's actually more common than a lot of other ones, but for some reason, that particular attribute is a lot more than its peers around it for the same quantities, right?
Agreed. Yeah. No, I'm always been impressed with how the blush, what's it called? Rosy cheeks. Never, I can understand why spots, there's a group of us that just, I actually love the punk that has the spots because it can elicit such a intense reaction from the yes. crowd. But, and like the mole, there's always someone in the channel. Like anytime a mole sells, it's five people react to the mole.
With why Austin. Do they react to the mole? Because they think it's cool.
It's like some Austin Powers reference or whatever. I some people just, it's like they can just look at that mole. But I think that rosy cheeks were always, and I haven't checked in a while, but like for a long time in the top, let's say attributes, everything would be over 10 ETH, except for rosy cheeks you could get for 2 ETH. And the spots you could get for 2 ETH, like in that top 10 most rare attribute set. I don't know where that's at now. I've also been blown away by like how some very common attributes like clown noses.
I even, love clown noses, man.
Yeah, they're like, it's like my favorite these days.
Like it's my favorite. Yeah. It's the reason I like punks is because they're so ridiculous. Like for me, the more ridiculous the character looks, like the cooler it is. Because I think of not as this just something that's sitting in my wallet, but like this will eventually be on my wall. So it'll be digital frames and like friends will come over and I want the most ridiculous looking punks on the wall.
Absolutely. Yeah. And those are the ones that stand out. It's really interesting over the years. There's only so much you can talk about with CryptoPunks in general, but there's 10,000 of them. So there's been love around individual ones where like every now and then someone in the community would be like, check this guy out. And then of course you check it out and you realize that it's in an account that hasn't moved ETH in 3 years. And then you get to talk about it. It's like it inevitably would always lead to that conversation of, well, how many do you think are lost? And that was a weekly conversation in the Discord. Cause back in the day, you would almost have a whole week where no one would speak in that Discord. I have not seen silence in that Discord in 3 months, like not even a moment. Baffling what's going on in there.
It's interesting. You have a great point though. For people that are listening to this and they're not into this scene, like you just don't jump in and buy a punk. Like the best thing to do is to get into this Discord and to start having conversations. People are really friendly. They were really helpful for me when I got back into it, you know, after so many years and finally recovered my wallet and figured out that I actually still had these things. There's two common questions that I get from friends is, number one, should I buy one now given how high the prices are, even on the floor, which is crazy. And the second thing is, I wish I could have bought one, they're too expensive. And I think I'll give my take and then I would love to hear your take. My take is that these are the blue chip. They will be forever cemented into the blockchain as being one of the very first NFT projects. I think they're always going to hold their value, if not go up quite a bit from here. It would not surprise me to see a floor base punk being in the hundreds of thousands of dollars a decade from now. You know, so I still believe like that's the reason why I'm holding mine, because I love mine. Actually, I don't have any that I'm just like, I don't personally have attachment to at this point. I got rid of the ones that I would just had back in the day that like I just was collecting them randomly. And now I actually have attachment to the ones that I hold. And so the other thing too is I actually have some buddies that none of them wanted to or could really afford to buy one, but we all went in on one together. And so we have a little Google spreadsheet and I was like, hey, I'll go in one with you guys. And so, you know, we have a group of friends and everybody transferred their ETH. We bought one, we put it into a wallet, we locked down the keys, and now everybody has it as their like their icon and their different things. And I think that's a fun, great way. Like to your point about you holding a piece of an alien, that's still meaningful, right? That's still cool. It's still a way to participate.
It's incredibly meaningful. And I have permission from the other 90% that if I ever build an exhibition, because my goal literally from 2007, from the claiming, I was like, okay, I need these zombies so that I can make an exhibition with all these zombies. Like, I think it would be a really cool space to just walk around all the zombies. And then when I shifted towards just collecting all the attributes, I was like, man, imagine a room that me and five other people in the world would actually get really excited about. Now maybe more, but back then it's like maybe five people would be like, oh, cool, I want to go see this place. But like a room that had a picture of every single attribute. And I always felt the alien wouldn't be there, but maybe there'd be like a question mark in that frame, yeah, whatever. And now I have permission from this group that like maybe if I ever build this, that I could, you know, say with, what is it, on loan from the Flamingo, yeah, DAO, because I participated in the purchase of the Flamingo DAO alien.
Do you think the market is at a peak right now? And obviously there can be sell-offs, we could see it, but are you a believer as I am that this is long-term, this is... It's, yeah, already cemented its place in history.
Yeah, so I've been wrong so many times that I feel guilty. Like I remember I was sitting with my buddies the first week of COVID and we were having our first Zoom call just because it was COVID and everybody was freaking out. So we weren't seeing anybody. And I was like, guys, I just want to tell you something. Like the cheapest CryptoPunk is $1,000 right now. And they'd be like, what? And of course, they've been listening to me just go on and on about CryptoPunks for years. And I was like, yeah. And they're like, well, then maybe now's the time to invest. And I was like, hell no. Like, they're way too high. Like, right. What are you thinking? Like they were $300 2 weeks ago. Like, no. And then they hit 4,000. And I don't know, these milestones I remember because these are like specific conversations I had with people that said, should I buy in? And I'm like, absolutely not. This thing is just exploding. Don't even think about it. And now I feel, obviously, I don't feel actually guilty, but I feel guilty that I told them not to buy in.
Dude, we're in the same boat.
Yeah, I wouldn't have bought more at those prices. Like, I wouldn't have because AI already had a lot if I didn't have any. And a similar thing that was happening is that I've gifted about 15 CryptoPunks over the last however many years to people for their kids and their birthdays and their babies and whatever. And it's when it reached that point where I could no longer afford gift. I was telling people, go buy CryptoPunks up until it crossed the $200 threshold. Like, when it crossed that maybe if my brother got married, I would buy him a $500 CryptoPunk. $200 for like friends, I think that's kind of like the limit for me, at least for wedding gifts and whatever. Yeah. So when it crossed that threshold, I went from telling people, man, you really should just buy one too. They're getting pretty expensive. Just cherish the ones you have. I do think that there's a really good chance that the value is going to drop at some point, either this month or in a year. But I have no doubt that long term, this is going to be, like you said, like a blue chip thing. Like I think there was a time in this world where something that there was 100 of would feel not scarce because the only people that had that would be communicating in person through a formal gallery email. Maybe they'd see it on TV if they like, but in this globalized world and like how massively distributed the NFT space is, 10,000 is just such a small number. And we are
getting
started. And an artist could have spent their whole life to be picked up by a gallery 20 years into being an artist and then spent the next 20 years being picked up by an extra 10 galleries and becoming a famous artist at that point. If you've got 10 galleries all over the world that carry your stuff and you might sell one piece a month. But the audience is so different. Like I love art and I've always been intimidated to walk into an art gallery because I could never spend $1,000 or $2,000 on a piece of art. I've missed out on tremendous amounts of art in my life because I just wasn't allowed to be exposed. I wouldn't let myself waste somebody's time walking in there, making them think they're about to, I'm in sales too, right? So there's always that thought as a salesperson, so I'm going to make a sale and then you're just crushed that there's no sale. Like I've always had that fear of doing that to people in art galleries. Oh, look, there's a customer. Oh no, that's not a customer. Like
yeah,
he wants like a print in the back that's $20 that was like wrinkled or something. But with NFTs, it's like such a different experience. You get exposed to slightly more expensive and then incredibly expensive things in the same room, in the same conversation. Mm-hmm. You're exposed to Mooncats when they first came out or whatever, and you're exposed to a $40,000 CryptoPunk. And that exposure on such a like broad level, such an instant market, such an instant level is something that I don't think art has had. Not just art, but collectibles, baseball cards, and Little League. We would trade our baseball cards like amongst our group. It's like my team and like 10 other teams, and we would maybe in school, I'd meet somebody that was also into baseball cards, so I would trade with that person. But this is like so many orders of magnitude more people that I just feel like there's almost no limit to where it can get. And yeah, you can buy a car, a really nice car, for a CryptoPunk right now. And that feels completely absurd to me. If it doesn't feel absurd to you, I think that there's like you should think about it. Like it no matter how much I believe in this long term, mm-hmm. it's still completely absurd. But if you really believe in what's happening, it makes perfect sense. And it's something that little by little, I can just see like a CryptoPunk being the equivalent of a Fabergé egg, like in terms of notability. It's like everybody knows like certain terms in the world of things sure. that were important and rare in history. And I just see CryptoPunks as being one, but one that doesn't have to be kept under supervision and potentially could get scratched and could get broken. It's like the CryptoPunk of the year 2200 is going to be in the exact same condition and as the CryptoPunk of today. And I think that's just fascinating. And I think when people wake up to that, more than has already happened because it's already completely absurd, we're going to see even more interest and even more excitement.
Yeah, I want to get to ArtBlocks, obviously, because that is the coolest project and why we first got connected and first started chatting was over what you were creating. Can you touch briefly on generative art and just how you got started in that and what your obsession around that space was? When did you first get involved?
I've been tinkering my whole life, like tinkering with code my whole life, never professionally or anything like that. I started, I'd say, my generative art career about 10 years ago, right around the time that I met my wife. And I went to Coachella and I saw this musician. His name is Amon Tobin and he's a sound engineer, but he had this beautiful projection mapped stage set that was just like, it literally just blew my mind and I couldn't stop thinking about it. And I was like, I want to do something like that. And I came back, I started tinkering with projectors and projection mapping, and I started tinkering with software that already existed for projection mapping. And I would create a lot of randomization into these. It's like watching a visualization at a concert where there's just a screen in the back and it's some hippie tie-dye thing behind the musician.
Yeah.
But the idea of applying that sequentially and generatively onto some cubes or onto some three-dimensional objects. So I got really deep into that.
Can you explain real quick for people that don't know, how does that differ from saying just hitting like play on a video and something that you've rendered in some, you know, 3D package?
Yeah. So what I did at the time is I connected essentially like the knobs that a DJ has. I connected that to an algorithm that I wrote or like a setup that I wrote in the software. At the time, it was called Touch Designer. I then eventually simplified it to write my own code. I would turn a knob and the lights would start flashing in one direction, and I would turn the knob and the lights would start flashing in the other direction. And then it got to the point where I didn't need to control it. I was able to program it to go almost on its own. Come up with its own outputs. And then I would let people come and push a button and it would just change the whole setup into a new output. And then they'd push another button. So then it kind of, this is where it became more of a generative thing versus just like a stage setup thing. It's like,
So
I kind of had these like outputs that would happen on demand that were programmed, but still a surprise because that's part of the generative side.
Yeah, so I think that's a really important piece because like when people see some of this stuff, or at least it's hard for people to understand what is the difference between that and something that is just a video. And so what you're saying is like it's actual code and you have no idea what the output's going to be really because you're just tweaking knobs and you're like, okay, let's see what this does. What does it look like? And in real time, you get that feedback and you get to see it morph and evolve and change based on the code that you've written. Is that a way to describe it?
Yeah. In my early time with these knobs and stuff, I'd say that was just where I started with generative content in general. But generative is even, if you just take it a step further, it's any visual output. It could be audio output, any output that as a coder, you shape all of the potential, you reduce, you curate all of the potential outputs using code, but then you randomize it. So you control what can and cannot happen. You create bounds for things and then you just let it go. And a typical generative artist, I don't know these days, but like when I was starting, it's a lot of pressing the space bar. And every time you press the space bar, you see a new output. And typically up until ArtBlocks existed, generative artists would do that. They would write a script, they would press space bar, they would pick maybe 10 outputs out of 100 that they really liked. They would save those 10. And then maybe they would display those 10 and pick one that they really liked. Maybe do a little bit of post-processing and put it on Super Rare or on another, you know, known origin, another crypto art platform. People were buying generative art before they really cared that it was actually generative art. They just loved the output. They liked the way that the output looked. It just so happened that it was created algorithmically. And I think that's a beautiful thing too, that people might have been purchasing something, but that generative art as a medium, I don't think has really gotten as much love as a lot of other mediums in the art world. And I think maybe this is giving it a little bit of a new stage and a new presence, which is really heartwarming too, really exciting too.
So the cool thing about ArtBlocks when I first saw some of your projects on OpenSea, because OpenSea is obviously the place that people go to explore and look at all different various NFT projects. And I remember seeing a couple that said that they were connected to ArtBlocks. And I was like, okay, what is this thing? And I went to the site and you curate artists, right? So you work with artists that are writing the code and then they're putting it on your site, and then people can essentially, like you said, the people that mint them, they're the ones hitting the space bar. They're the ones saying stop,
exactly,
and then create the art, and then it gets transferred to my wallet. So they, in essence, they have no idea what they're going to receive when they're minting an NFT with you. Yeah, absolutely. Can you talk to me about that whole process? Like, how did you develop it? Because there'd been a couple, I guess CryptoPunks was like that, and that they didn't know what the output was going to be until they ran the program, but it wasn't the user that was running the program. And you said, okay, let's allow the end consumer to run the program, not have it run ahead of time. Is that right?
Literally the moment I was claiming my CryptoPunks is when I came up with the idea of art blocks, because I was sitting there thinking, why, as selfish as it was to claim all these zombies, like, why do I get the privilege of claiming all these zombies? The blockchain has enough information and has enough tools for me to click claim, and I would just be presented with a CryptoPunk. And if I was lucky, I would have been presented with a zombie. But the selfishness or the greed on my end to be able to go in and pick them has worked out for me. And if it wasn't me, it would have been somebody else. So I don't
Listen, I would have done the same thing.
Exactly. So
anyone listening to this would have been like, okay, load me up on the zombies.
Yeah, no, I don't really feel that selfish. But at the same time, I was like, damn, like how cool would it be if like, it's more like opening a pack of cards. Like I definitely collected comic cards and baseball cards when I was younger. So that whole experience of opening the card, and like, I remember with a Marvel series 2 or series 3, there was the holograms. And so like one out of every like 15 packs, you'd open it.
Yes.
You'd see the little like hint of the hologram in there. And that feeling is
so exciting.
It's so exciting. So I feel like that hologram is like the zombie, and the blockchain can give you this. So that was the first moment of inspiration towards ArtBlocks, was claiming my CryptoPunks for that specific reason. Even though I was claiming my CryptoPunk and I knew which one I was claiming, the moment the transaction was confirmed, I got like a little excitement too. So there's this excitement just involved in like crypto in general and the successful trade, especially back then, because you didn't just click MetaMask, right? Like you had to execute like a smart contract transaction. And to me, I just took it, my brain started wandering towards, okay, what if I was just granted my CryptoPunk this way? And I remember it probably sounded like a total lunatic, but like I sent a direct message to Matt, you know, from Larva Labs. And I was like, I look back now and it probably sounds like a total lunatic, right? Like I was like, hey, what if you did this and blah, blah, blah. Like, because now I get like direct messages all the time from people. And it's just, I'm sure that they were just overwhelmed with direct messages all the time too. And it's like, people have no idea what they're talking about. And people have all these ideas. And literally it's like a total, like, okay, man, thanks for your feedback. But you don't want to say this is completely unreasonable, but whatever. But yeah, no, I remember just like going on and being like, look, what it'd be really cool if there was another CryptoPunks type project, but if we did it this way, and if you let people claim it, and they were presented with their assets, blah blah blah. Yeah, that was the main inspiration.
When did you launch it? Well, it was your own project, the Squiggles, the first one to launch?
Yeah, so I launched what you see now in November, on Black Friday of last year, of 2020, November 27th. ArtBlocks version 1 launched in 2018. I think it was May 2018 is when my first Medium article went out. It was in a totally different form factor. It was when it was launched on Ethereum. In fact, in 2017, ArtBlocks was on the track to being its own masternode currency.
Crazy.
Like your masternode was like your art project and people would interact with that. Because that's the thing about 2017. It's, we all ran these masternodes, but they were totally worthless and useless. Like it was just proof of stake. There was this like elitism of owning, or not elitism. You also earn more tokens for hosting a masternode. So I was like, I'm going to come up with a real reason to have a masternode. It's going to be for hosting generative art projects. And like people would literally roll their eyes so hard that it would just flip into the back of their skulls. But yeah, the project launch in, I think, May 2018 was the first time I had like a functional anything. No front end. It was just a smart contract with connected projects that were listening to a block hash. But in 2020, after COVID got me to this point where I had an extra 3 hours every day, I learned how to code. I learned how to code from scratch, basically, because all I had coded before was just generative, like P5.js or even some Python stuff. So I actually learned how to code from scratch, JavaScript, Node, React, brushed up on Solidity, and finally got deep into it and launched ArtBlocks in 2020.
And the first project, which one was the first to launch?
So that's the Chromie Squiggle. So the Chromie Squiggle was a part study, proof of concept of my thought behind Chromie Squiggle is like, what could I create where you would be able to guarantee that each one is different, no matter how many there were, and adding a bunch of points on, you know, the point data plus adding color and variance was a way to do that. And so I was at one point, I was like, okay, I'm going to generate 100,000 of these and sandwich, like overlay them and see if there's any that even come close to being similar. Obviously, like perceptually, if you see a bunch of crummy squiggles, like they can look similar to each other, but literally being able to overlap them and find two duplicates, I think literally there's like trillions of squiggles that could happen before you would actually get like a duplicate squiggle, and maybe even more, because each point and the spread between each point is there's 100 options for each point and there's 24 points. And so it's just 100 times 100. So yeah, so that was the proof of concept. I spent 2 years tweaking that code, that script. Also, DCA was involved in 2017 and 2018. He goes by Dan on Discord. He did the Genesis project. So he's project one. And so I finally got to put his stuff out there after years of, he created the Genesis project also in 2018 to demonstrate what ArtBlocks could do in terms of creating outputs with hashes. And along the way, early on, I met Jeff Davis, who's, ArtBlocks probably wouldn't be where it is today without him. And he was project number two. He's the one that he and Dan and myself launched on day one with our three projects. And everything's just been a total hurricane since.
Yeah. So one of the reasons I really love ArtBlocks, and I tell me if this was, obviously, I guess it was by design, is you act as somewhat as a gatekeeper and a curator. Like one of the issues with just having an open platform for everyone is anyone with Photoshop can mint an NFT, and it's hard to really say galleries are like this. When you walk into a gallery, someone has taken the time to say, these are the artists that we respect enough to want to display here. And in some sense, you're saying you must get a lot of applications from artists wanting to put their art. Like, what does that selection process look like? And because is that just gone nuts? You have like hundreds of applications now?
We hit 300. There was no curation at the beginning because I actually thought nobody was going to give a damn about ArtBlocks. And so I was like, I'll take anything. If anybody's willing to write a script that has an output that's derived from like this algorithm on the blockchain, I'll take it. But in the first week, we got like 30, 40 applicants. And then like within the first month, we had over 100 and we capped it at 300, we closed the applications at 300 and we're working through that. But there's two levels of curation. A, there's a really nice automatic creation curation in the fact that you have to understand how to code. And one of the things about our application list is that a lot of people saw ArtBlocks, love the idea, applied, but they're not coders and they just applied with an idea and a concept. And that's totally cool. But when we started, I would have been able to spend, assuming that nobody cared about ArtBlocks, I might have been able to spend one-on-one with those people and develop the project and hash it out and like create something with them. Whereas at this point, we're at a point where if you don't have a running script, we just don't have the capacity to really. So there's that curation. There's also self-curation because it costs between 1 and 3 ETH to deploy the algorithm onto the Ethereum blockchain. So an artist has to really believe in their stuff. Otherwise, they're taking a huge risk by deploying on the blockchain. Mm-hmm. And then because that didn't deter people and we still had hundreds of applicants, we formed this curation board, which is composed of about 20 people, some really notable people in the crypto space, but also notable people in the generative art space and notable people in the regular art world too. And so they are the ones that decide what's landing in the curated section. And as the platform has grown, you will see that the curated section might skip a week for a drop because we're stepping up the intensity and the requirements for curated projects to pass curation. There was never going to be a curated portion of ArtBlocks. That was never part of the conversation. I would literally wanted to create a platform for people that like generative art, that have never really had a medium to display their work, to be able to do it with provenance, with history of the hash, with history of like the random variables that create the output. That has never existed. There's been websites that do that. There's websites that you could go click generate and you would just press spacebar right on somebody's algorithm and then have a t-shirt printed. And I've always loved those websites. I think that's cool. But there was never, just like with CryptoPunks, something free had provenance instilled into it from day one when it was free. Otherwise, if it was just, as much as I love CryptoPunks, if Larva Labs had just made a website and said, hey, come claim my punks on a server, it wouldn't be what it is today. It's that provenance built into it. ArtBlocks builds this provenance into generative content. And so, yeah, like curation is great. And that's a beautiful thing where as a collector, I'm really enjoying the curated part, but that wasn't part of the plan. The plan was just to have 100 projects, not necessarily selling out, a place where people that like generative art, that want a one-of-one authentic, unique piece of art to just go and buy something they like.
So do you ever see this as being a platform that you eventually have two sides to it, where there is the curation part that maybe is the lens that your 50 trusted art friends like help put together and pull out some of the best that you want to feature, and then open up the rest to the long tail? Would that ever be the case?
Yeah, and that's actually what we're working on now. And we do get a lot of pushback from the community, because the community has been amazing and they've been basically collecting everything that we're putting out. And so
but they sell out so fast. I just can't keep up.
And so now we have this factory division where it's stuff that doesn't fall into curated for whatever reason, the tokenomics, because somebody wants to do a small run, whatever it might be. And now we have 6 or 7 open projects, and we get a lot of pushback. People are like, hey, quit adding projects. Like, they're not selling out. And my thought is like, the vision is 100 just sitting there. But we will conserve this curated section because we really ended up finding these beautiful artists that early on thought what we were doing was cool. And they put their stuff on our platform and trusted us with their like beautiful work on our platform. And so we will continue to preserve that as a business strategy that was not part of the original equation.
Yeah.
But we will continue with our business strategy of the original equation, which is to let people just put stuff on chain. And there still need to be onboarded manually. It'll never be like other platforms, like, for example, OpenSea, Rarible. People can just mint their own stuff. There's too much of a barrier to entry. You have to understand coding. You have to understand to a degree how JavaScript works. Otherwise, you'll never be able to put your stuff on the platform. We have members of our team that onboard every single project. It can take between 2 to 3 hours to onboard every single project. So it's still quite the effort on our part to make it happen, which helps curate too. If somebody just sends us trash, like, it's just not even going to go into the factory. But eventually, yeah, we will have an even clearer distinction for the curated section compared to what we call the playground and factory sections. And long term, over time, I see the term powered by art blocks. Like, I see individual art blocks contracts and individual art blocks agreements literally just being used as a term to explain what's happening in the background, like that this is a generative NFT stored on chain or logic stored on chain. But the long-term vision is not just this curated and then like these artists putting their stuff out there, but it's also the fact that I believe that in the future, humans will find more and more of a desire to have unique items, and mm-hmm. that unique item being authentic and still accessible in price because of the way that the blockchain does everything for you will enable people to be able to have unique things, such as when they go to IKEA, instead of everybody buying the same poster, they might put $20 in the machine and it'll spit out like a unique version of that poster printed.
That's amazing.
And it's, you go to your friend's house and you see the same artwork. It's the same project because it shares all those things, but yours is green and theirs is red because the blockchain created that. And now you also have this ERC-20 token or 721 token or whatever it's going to be at the time. Maybe there's going to be some new standard by the time IKEA even wants to talk to us, if they even want to talk to us. But to me, there's something really valuable there. And I start with that because everybody, when I was going to college, had the same posters on their wall. But I think that this can get into like graphic design, furniture design. I think that if you have a designer that generates a coffee table, that's just amazing. And they're going to do an edition of 100 and you can go buy the plans for it. They're not going to make it for you. They just sell you the plans, but you have this one of one, like authentic piece of their design. Like just like,
oh, it's so cool.
So I think there's opportunities in architecture. I think there's opportunities in design. I think there's opportunities in gaming when you create your character can be created algorithmically, like if your character is tall or short or has a green blouse on or whatever it might be. I always think of like Dragon Warrior and like Zelda and these other nerdy things from my past. Planets, we have a dude creating planets on the blockchain.
I just minted one of the planets a couple days ago.
Yeah,
those are like, so cool.
It's so simple and clean. And now that you can see it on OpenSea Live, it's like pretty amazing too. Eventually someone can take that planet and build a game where you populate that planet or something. And like you own that original asset and somebody can just build on it because it's an NFT.
Yeah.
That to me is the reason why I think art blocks, what it is now, is awesome. It's like we're having a blast. The curated thing really calls to my artistic love for art, love for generative art. I feel responsible for a really beautiful thing there. But long term, I think art blocks is going to be known for creative content, not just art, but creative content in a way that allows people to afford unique, authentic, provable iterations of outputs.
Yeah, it's so much fun too. And I love that you actually have the gifting feature, because a friend of mine was over for dinner and he was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I said, okay, pull up your Ethereum wallet, give me your address. And in 5 minutes, there was a brand new random piece of art. And he actually got some of the more rare attributes than his. I think it was a Jeff Davis piece or something. And I was like, oh, I can't believe I just gifted you that. That's worth way more than the one that I have. But that's the beautiful thing about this random output. And it was beautiful. And you never know, you know, what you're going to get. And it is my childhood that's recalling the opening of the packs. Yeah, so this has been working really well. I mean, you're top 10. I'm looking at, I don't know how accurate these stats are, but I'm looking at CryptoSlam. They track all the different projects in terms of volume. And, you know, you're number 7 right now. It says $16.3 million worth of transactions have gone through that they've tracked on our blocks. That's crazy.
It's insane, man. It's totally insane.
I know you can't call out and say, it's hard because you work with a lot of artists and you don't want to piss anybody off, but give me 5, because I'm going to do a lot of really detailed show notes for this episode. We're going to link up a lot of really cool projects. Can you give me like 5 like really cool ones that just top of mind, like not playing favorites, but what should people, I'll start like Ringers. I love the Ringers. I love the simplicity. I love the artist. He's just a fascinating dude. And the algorithm that he wrote to create the Ringers project on Artblocks. I'm a big collector. I have like, well, I shouldn't say big. I have 4 or 5 of them. They're awesome. And I've been trying to get some of the rare ones. I got the Bullseye one, which is super rare. I watched an interview with him that I thought was fantastic that I'll link up in the show notes as well. That's one of my favorites. What are some that you like or are interesting right now?
Yeah, I love all of them. I love all of them. Like, my wife is like, Eric, this is why the curation board exists. Like, my wife has the tendency to be like, yeah, but you love everything. I would show her every single project and get just as excited. And she'd be like, all right, dude, I don't like this one as much. And I'd be like, what are you talking about? You're crazy. But, you know, she's actually has like curation in her brain and I don't. Like, I just get excited about everything, obviously. But because I love all of them, I'd say that like notable ones would be the ones that kind of were the first to put something out there. I think that's really interesting. I think, for example, there's one called Unigrids, and like, they were the first to make a generative sound on chain. It's like 100% on chain project. There's no outside dependencies. And I think they, you know, deserve credit for being bold enough to put something out like that. The Singularity project, which we did on New Year's Day, 2021.
Love that one. Yes.
Yeah, that was the first, I think, fully JavaScript, 100% on chain project. For sure, it was our first 100% on chain project for Artblocks, but like there's been a lot of on chain crypto projects and they're amazing. But one of the things that makes Artblocks different is that if you have a 100% on chain project, you might build an infrastructure for one specific type of thing, which is great. Like, for example, assembling SVGs with avatars, like, awesome. Conceptually, it's a beautiful, but then you can only assemble SVGs, right? So what I think Artblocks was enabling is somebody could create an algorithm of something so deep and so complex in what Singularity is and deploy it on the blockchain and still be 100% on chain, right?
So yeah, I think that's a really important piece to tease out for just 30 seconds, because people that are new to this world will not understand exactly what we're talking about. But what you're saying is that not all, when you see a really high res NFT that's doing something amazing on some project, those are most likely just actually in the blockchain. What is cemented in the blockchain, what is pushed in the blockchain is the ownership, what it is, like a pointer to the file sometimes on a different outside storage, like IPFS or something like that, but not the actual art. So it can prove ownership, but you're not actually getting the full package on chain. So when you say on chain, you mean everything to reconstruct that image is stored in the blockchain.
100%. Yeah. And we can't host photographs, we can't host recorded audio, we can't host videos because you can't put that on chain. And so,
because the chain itself does not support it. It wasn't built
expensive.
For that.
Yeah, it's too expensive. But you take something that can be written algorithmically that can create something really deep and exciting and put that, it's like, that's the whole concept, is you can start with, in this case, like, I think Singularity was 800 lines of code. 800 lines of code is still less than a 100 by 100 pixel image, like regular image, or maybe a 200 by 200 pixel image. But it creates, if you have the processing power to make your browser window 16,000 by 16,000 pixels, and then you click refresh on the live view, you get a 16,000 by 16,000 full resolution image of a Singularity, which would cost maybe a gigabyte to get like a purely high resolution image on the blockchain. Like, it would cost $1 million or more to like put that onto a blockchain, right?
So, and I think that why this is important to tell people, just one more kind of analogy would be that, let's pretend 500 years from now, people are poking around and looking on back on chain and the old chain and going through Ethereum and seeing what's been built. And they may find an NFT that was cemented in there and be like, oh, there's some trace here of an NFT. It looks like it was pretty cool. But oh, wait a second, that link to the image is broken. It's gone because it's not on chain. We don't know what that ever looked like. There's right. Because that piece of it went away. What you're saying is that as long as Ethereum is around 1,000 years from now, people can go, they'll find all of the code necessary and they'll be able to execute it and recreate it full resolution on any modern day device that supports it at that point in time, which is awesome because it's there forever as long as Ethereum is around. That's a very important piece.
There's some caveats, obviously. If JavaScript doesn't exist in 1,000 years, then some archaeologist is going to have to find some repo of JavaScript and create an emulator, just like we have a Nintendo emulator today, right? 8-bit emulators exist and we can process those. There's nothing natively reads like an NES cartridge on our computers today. But if people find value in Zelda 2, then somebody created a way to reproduce Zelda 2 on our current screens.
My daughter's name is Zelda, so I find value in all Zeldas.
That's so rad. But yeah, that sums it up. I still believe a lot in things that have to be pinned on IPFS. I love the idea that you can prove ownership of a digital asset. So I don't undervalue things that are not 100% on chain, but I do add a lot of value to things that are 100% on chain. I refer to them as a higher technical quality NFT, zero to do with the quality of the art. But from a technical perspective, I think it is an irrefutable fact that it is a higher quality NFT. And to put it bluntly, even something like Avastars is a higher quality NFT than an art blocks piece, just because of the pure, because they concentrate on that one foundation of layering SVGs, they were able to really build an infrastructure just around one particular type. And so that particular type is an even higher quality NFT. And we took a little bit of a sacrifice there by being able to enable things like SVG, like there's an AlgoBots project that we had last week that's built almost exactly the same way as like an Avastar is, in terms of like we have SVG stored on chain. The algorithm combined a bunch of SVGs to create this little cute robot that Stina Jones put out. But by taking it one step down technically, we were able to now allow audio, 3D, and a bunch of different other projects. And so we were willing to take that sacrifice to be able to add that level of just variety to the outputs.
Speaking of cool projects, you just mentioned AlgoBots. Those are cute little robots. That's a new one.
Oh, man. I have been following some of these generative artists for years. And so I think without downplaying any of the projects, because I think they're all great and all the artists are really amazing. And I don't, you know, I have children, so I understand what it is to call out favorites. I would just like to call out the fact that like some of these artists that have been creating art for years that I've been following. So that's like Dimitri with his ringers, Alexis with the 720 Minutes project.
Oh, and 720 Minutes are so cool. Yeah,
I think that people don't understand that this is maybe the first functional NFT that's ever existed, like truly functional, plus it's 100% on chain.
What do you mean by functional?
It's a clock. It literally, if you open it in your browser, it's telling time. And then he built this crazy thing into it where 1 minute in every clock, so there's 720 minutes in the time between midnight and noon. So he programmed one crazy psycho minute where like the clock starts just exploding and like letting out light, and it's different for every single clock. So you collect that, and then that's that one time a day, like at noon, the clock tower, the bells would ring. Like for him, his piece, 1 minute of the day, the clock just starts going crazy. And you could trick your computer, I guess. You could set your system time to like cheat it, but no one's going to do that. So if you have this thing on an iPad on your wall, 1 minute of the day, it's going to do this thing. And like the anticipation of that, like I have three of them that are usually at a time that I can dedicate to seeing them. So every now and then I'm like, oh, it's about to be 3:37. Like I'll jump on there and watch it, because I'm not going to trick my system clock to like display that time.
Yeah.
That's mind blowing. And also his new piece Void, to me, it was one of the most delicate and beautiful things I've seen in the art world. I can see that as like a 5-foot by 5-foot canvas in the entrance of a house. And then Aaron Penn, which I have followed for years. Like I used to reach out to him on Reddit and see if he could, there was a tile project. I had asked him to see if he would make me like a generative Terrazzo tile that I could then print, and because I'm in the tile business. And, you know, so he's someone that I've followed for a long time. So he released Apparitions. Yeah. Can't speak highly enough about him as a human being. Him and Alexis and Dimitri are three that I just have, it's just weird. Like, also Gerard, he's an artist that I've known for a long time, but I didn't even think he was into crypto. And all of a sudden he's the one that wrote, he did the Ignition piece, the first kind of three-dimensional animated interactive art blocks piece. And he just applied one day to the art blocks application. I was like, oh my God, that's GE1 dude. So those people that I've followed that are participating, And I didn't feel like I had to ask them or beg them. So in 2018, I literally was like, hey, could you please give this a try? Now it's like, these people think there's value in what we're doing. We have a couple coming up that I'm just mind blown that are talking to us and like doing stuff with us. And that to me, I would say that those stand out the most just because I feel like I'm speaking to a celebrity when I'm talking to them. Like I've been following them for years. To me, they are like my favorite artists in the world and I get to interact with them on a daily basis. And there's nothing more exciting, I think, no matter how good ArtBlox is doing, like being able to like have those casual conversations with people that I value their outputs in life. It's just really impressive.
You know what the other one I like is Synapses. That one's really cool.
Yeah, he's been doing that type of work for a long time. He's built his brand around this kind of particle fuels that move around Arjit. He's just a really wonderful guy to talk to. He's great. He's been around since the beginning of ArtBlox too.
That's awesome. Eric, thank you so much for sharing this with us. And like I said, the show notes are just going to be just packed full of links. So definitely go and check out each of these projects. And the best way to experiment is to find a project that speaks to you and just play. Just mint one. There's nothing like it. It's really cool. It's going to cost you a few $100, right? Like to get into the game, but it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Where can people find you?
Well, on Twitter, I'm Art on Blockchain. I created an account in 2018, just when I started the concept of putting art on the blockchain. And it was pretty dormant for a while, but Art on Blockchain is my personal account on Twitter. ArtBlox_IO is my, our company account or our corporate account, or what do you call it? Like our platform account. Then my wife actually runs our Instagram account, which we've been so slammed and I'm so grateful that she's been keeping up with it. But like Instagram is a much, much more beautiful way of displaying ArtBlox pieces than Twitter is. And so, you know, it's the same handle. It's ArtBlox_IO. I really encourage people to follow us there just because it's so much more beautiful of a way of interacting. And she posts videos for every project pre-drop and post-drop if it's animated. Otherwise, Discord. I spend, God, embarrassingly 15 hours a day on that platform. So that's a good place. I'm Snowfro on Discord as well.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I highly recommend the Instagram just because, like you said, they're so dynamic and moving and you want to see everything that's going on. And it's really cool to get the full depth of it versus just sometimes you pictures of them going around where it's just like a flat image and they still look really cool, but it's not as cool as seeing the interaction happen. Well, thanks so much, Eric, for being on the show. Appreciate it.
Kevin, I'm so flattered, man. Thank you for having me.
All right, that is it for this episode of Modern Finance. Hope you enjoyed it. I just love all things ArtBlox. Also, if you want to check out some of the stuff that I've collected on ArtBlox, I'll go ahead and link up my OpenSea profile so that you can see exactly which projects I think are the coolest. And if you want to hear about stuff like this very early, even before we have the guests on the show, sign up for the Modern Finance newsletter. Once I find a new project that I'm really pumped on and want to share it with you, that'll be the first place you'll hear about it. So it's the best way to get on this stuff early. All right, that's it for now. See you next week. Take care.